conversation with Dr. Dick Tom, and we discuss the power of prayer as part of healing miracles and how people can find health and well-being in areas that are not medically based. So stay tuned. I want to kind of shift gears a little bit here because this wasn't the conversation 25 years ago. This was a later, same topic.
Okay.
Which is the spiritual aspect of people getting sick, people getting better, and where that, how that sort of, because, you know, certainly a lot of my work is around mind-body stuff, understanding, people understanding their beliefs about their well-being, and how sometimes those beliefs can help you. You could believe I'm gonna kick this, whatever this is, you know, cancer. And other beliefs are like, oh, I'm never gonna get through this. It's never gonna change. And or the over identification with the illness, right? I'm a cancer survivor, whatever.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing. It's like, how do you see that over your years playing in to all of this?
So my observation is, through thousands of patients, is on my intake form, I ask if they have a spiritual belief or if they follow a spiritual belief. And if they either answer yes or no, and if they answer yes, they'll say Christianity or Judaism or Muhammad or whatever. And it's like, or whatever it is. And so I mean, I don't question it because it's not my point to question it. My point is to have it, to know if you have a belief beyond us, beyond this world, right. We'll say. And so where I mostly pay attention to that is when I treat cancer patients, just as you just said, because what I have found is in treating, and I've treated thousands of cancer patients, the patients, and just a generic comment here. Patients who I see who have cancer, in many cases, have been told, you know, they have stage 4 pancreatic cancer, they have stage 5 lung cancer, and they're said, oh, you have 3 or 6 months to live. And virtually without exception, in thousands of patients, none of that comes true. It doesn't mean they don't die of lung cancer or pancreatic cancer, but I can think of one patient that was told the doctor said, there's nothing I can do. I think you'll probably die within a month or two. She lived 22 months in high quality with no real symptoms. And we personally have a friend here in Phoenix who probably 5-6 years ago now was told he had stage 4 pancreatic cancer. There's nothing he can do. What did he do? Prayed a lot. They have no sign. He has no sign of any cancer. And he functioned just like he did before he was told he had pancreatic cancer. So I well know that a belief in another entity, another spirit, sort of outside of, you know, the logical thinking almost with your heart, if you like, per se, and knowing without knowing how you know, intuition, I call it. So the patients who don't have some form of spiritual belief, whatever it is, I have found have a very difficult time when they're ready to transition, when they are at the end, you know, and, you know, if you question it, I'll sort of say, why are you struggling? What's the struggle here? It's okay. It's okay. You're going to a better place. And they'll look and say, I don't know, I'm falling off the cliff and I don't know what's at the bottom of the cliff. Whereas people with a spiritual belief said, I know it's a better place. I have every belief that, you know, I've had the purpose that I have in this life and I'm ready to transition to what's next. And they're almost looking forward to it. And almost without fail, the unfortunately dozens and dozens of patients I've seen over 50 years who died of cancer, the ones who have a spiritual belief, the transition is actually pretty simple. It's pretty easy. Their family can be there or not be there. It depends on, you know, what the individual feels like at the time. But generally, I've been there with a number of these people. You'll hold their hand. They'll look at you. They'll take one deep breath. And then they just stop. And it's very simple. It's a very relaxed process. It's not stressful. It's not traumatic. The family is not. Of course, there's a grief because you're losing a family member. Yeah. But very often the patient is ready to leave, but their family is not ready for them to leave.
Right.
So I'll have to have a conversation with the family said, and what is it that this person is gaining by staying here? They're going to a better place unless they don't have a spiritual belief. Then they don't know where they're going. But the people who have a spiritual belief in whatever have total understanding that they're ready. The transition is time. It's the right time.
It's the way I phrase it is, do you believe you're a spiritual being having a physical experience, or do you believe you're a physical being having a spiritual experience?
Okay.
And I agree. I it's quite beautiful. I mean, if you have the belief I'm a spiritual being having a physical experience, maybe there's less attachment to the outcome. If I kick this cancer or not kick the cancer, you know?
Sure. Yes.
Because lots of people pray for wellness, but not everyone who prays gets better.
Correct. We're all going to leave at some point. And from an anthroposophical perspective, from Steiner stuff, Steiner put out to the world, we're here for a finite period of time. We're here to have whatever purpose it is. And he and his teachings basically gave the idea that it's finite time. And I remember speaking to one of the people that I respect who studied anthroposophical medicine greatly, who often said that. So I said, well, what happened if a person commits suicide? And he said, they don't transition until their time is right, according to anthroposophical teaching. Mm-hmm. So they sort of circle, and they sort of live and again in a different state. But actually not able to experience what I think we all will potentially look forward to if one has indeed a spiritual belief. As I said, you are a spiritual person here in the opera, basically in a physical body while we're in this form. I personally believe we're going to a better place. I personally believe whatever form that goes into. And it's easy to say, is somebody afraid of dying? And it's not hard with dealing with cancer patients, the patients who think they have to do anything and everything to survive another day. And I'm thinking, and what's that day going to give you? Is there something more you need, a purpose you need to accomplish? I mean, they're not going to. And often these people are in a fair bit of distress. And I said, you know, there's no reason to be in distress. If in fact we have drugs for that, you can take a whole bunch of morphine if you want, and you don't have to be in pain in order to transition. Because medicine does have the ability to support that. But I would say in my patient population, no matter what type of, and it doesn't have to be cancer, it could be some other illness in general, but you don't have to be in pain. In my own personal practice over these five decades, the only what I would consider true miracles have all been through prayer. That's just my own personal experience. You know, the patients who had an incurable illness that, you know, there's no way that the gentleman I mentioned, to me, that was one of the miracles. I mean, his doctors have no idea where did stage 4 pancreatic cancer go? Like, how can we find no signs of it? I mean, whether we take an X-ray or an image or do blood test, there's nothing. There's nothing there that was there before when we started. It's all gone. Like, where did it go?
Right. And from a spiritual perspective, I'm asking the question, like, what was the purpose of that? Like, what was the purpose of him having that? And what was the purpose of him not having it? And he may know, and he may not know.
And I've never asked him that question, but it is an interesting question. So, I mean, I would just give my own personal bias opinion, which would basically say it's to show other people in similar situations that healing is indeed possible. You know, it wasn't his time. I think it was evident. It wasn't his time to leave.
Clearly.
And he had something, he had more purpose to show the universe per se, and everybody around him who knows him knows that he is truly a miracle on earth. His time will come, and he may still die of pancreatic cancer in 5 or 10 years from now. He may be sick for 1 month, but it's his time. I have a strong belief in that aspect of things. So the people who either want to, you know, their illness is part of their personality, that's a problem. It's sort of, somehow they're getting something from it, which whatever that is. And so they carry on. I have chronic COVID. I have chronic Lyme disease. I have chronic rheumatoid arthritis. It doesn't matter, again, what the word is or how people approach that.
So it's interesting. Because I had this conversation with a friend of mine about this who does have MCAS, and she was having really bad reactions. So she goes down the internet rabbit hole to find some treatment and finds this treatment. It's SAAT, and I'll put it in the notes because I'm blanking what it stands for. But it's basically an acupuncture treatment where you get one needle. And interestingly, it's treating the vagus nerve. So it's treating parasympathetic nervous system. And that apparently, and they claim it's 100% success rate for MCAS. And I'm like, yeah, I could see how that it's parasympathetic nervous. No question about that. But we got on the topic of, because she mentioned another friend of hers who has it, who's basically like that. She's identified with the illness. And I said, are you going to tell her about it? She says, yeah, I'm going to tell her about it. But I already know she's not going to go. She's not going to get treatment.
Right.
And so that brings up a question, which is like, do you think that there's an element of people seek out doctors, like they know who, in those cases, who won't be able to help them? We seek what it is that is going to prove our reality, and somehow we find it. Has that been your experience?
Well, without any doubt. And those are the people who, in my experience, who I've seen, who will tell me that they've had 15 different surgeries. They've had surgery for this, they've had surgery for that. They think it's this, they think it's that per se. And so they sort of keep looking. And so I'll say, well, what are you looking for? Like, well, I want to get rid of, and they'll say whatever I want to get rid of. I say, well, it hasn't worked. So do you think that really is the preferred approach that to you to be taking? And those people typically don't come back because they realize that I'm not going to help them figure out another surgery or some other therapy that they haven't tried. Because it's, in fact, it's quite common that, I mean, I've had patients, not uncommonly, who said, you're the 15th physician I've seen. I said, well, what did the other 14 do? Like, why didn't they help? Like, what are you looking for? Like, why do you think I can do anything? My training is probably the same as theirs. So why would I have a different answer?
My favorite is when someone comes and says, I've been to Mayo Clinic and Cleveland Clinic. They haven't been able to help me. And I'm just like, and what am I, doctor of last resort? Like, you know.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're looking for something, but I think their question is wrong. Is they're not looking in the mirror and saying, what is the reason that I keep experiencing this? And maybe instead of going to a doctor, maybe you need to go to a priest or a rabbi or, you know, a shaman or somebody else who will give you, who will think outside the box and will be able to give you some guidance potentially of areas that maybe in that particular case, what's more underlying. I'm a huge believer that trauma plays an incredible large role in people's experiences and people's health challenges, you know, as they age, and which may not show up for 30 or 40 or 50 years. And, you know, I'm still fascinated. I've only seen that I can recall three of these patients, but I can remember one patient when I was still living in Portland. I literally would have to ask her who she was when she came in. Are you Anne today, or are you Mary? Who are you coming in as today? And if you're coming in as Anne, you'll have high blood pressure and diabetes. And if you're coming in as Mary, your blood sugar will be fine, and your blood pressure will be fine. So who are you today? So multiple personality, it's like they say it's not possible. Well, I can tell you it is possible because I've seen three of these people.
I can tell you it's possible. I had a case with a woman that I was doing neurofeedback. So I mapped her, did some neurofeedback. She was doing better. And I was like, oh, I don't know what to do next. So I map her again. And usually the maps, they're more like thumbprints. They change, but there's patterns that you see, and they were completely different. And so I called her psychiatrist. I said, you know, if I didn't know any better, I would say this was two people. She says, oh, didn't I tell you she has DID, dissociative integrative disorder? Like, no, no, you didn't tell me that. That would have been useful to know. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was right there in the map. And mm-hmm. she came in acting completely differently. And she did get better, by the way, with the neurofeedback. But it's not easy. It is not easy treating DID. And I actually think potentially that everyone has a little bit of it physiologically if they've had trauma.
They I would not, agree. Totally.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they don't necessarily. I think the difference is that kin that holds those pieces together is still in there. Right. So it's not like you go through Monday as one person, but you might be more moody or something. And then Tuesday, but everything's sort of congruent and, you know, there's a consistency.
Right.
But you do have different, you do see people having different physiological responses. Day to day.
And not only that, people's response to the same trauma is quite different. Can be different.
Yeah.
You know, I have a set of identical twins who, and I don't remember how old they were, but they were 5 or 6 years old. And one twin was particularly close to her grandmother and she passed away. And the other twin was, it's too bad granny died. And they grew up identical genetically, two totally different, even though identical, two totally different sets of illnesses as they got older.
Yeah.
And it's set by similar trauma, different response, resulting in different physiology as they got older.
Yeah. And I'm actually putting together a workshop about the stories that we tell ourselves and how it affects our health. And I would say, I don't want to minimize trauma when I say this, but I think that it's less about the trauma and more about the belief that we create as a result of our experience that we are living with unconsciously and not being in touch with your body around that too, you know.
Your response to the trauma and how you deal with it really is what, to me, is what determines the long-term impact of what it is, per se. I mean, I'll listen to some patient's story and think, holy moly, how is this person still with us? And I'll listen to somebody else's trauma and it's like, well, you know, I cut my finger and it's like, I thought my finger was going to die and I was going to bleed to death. What are you talking about? You know? So the response is quite different. And then, as you just said, how you interpret that and then how you carry it forward really is what determines because of the mind-body connection.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just interesting because I have patients and it's like really clear. They have a particular belief, for example, I'm never going to get better. And those people do not, I'm guessing they could pray till the cows come home.
Right.
They're not, until they deal with that belief and confront it, they're not going to get better. That's my sense.
Well, I think that is the reality. We hear, unfortunately, there was that incident today in Minnesota, and it's like, so they say, we'll pray for you. And it's like, well, what does that mean? Okay, I'm happy that you do that, but is that going to change the incident? No, it's not going to change, unfortunately, what happened. Can never change it after the fact. What it can change, though, is how these people who were in that experience move forward. So from that perspective, I can see it as a one-on-one, although we do know that collective prayer, based on the study that was done in Washington, D.C., probably a couple of decades ago, where they have over an entire summer, they had every church and everybody was praying, that significantly decreased crime rate and you know, a whole variety of things. So prayer has, there's an energy that's associated with prayer more than just saying the words. it's not just, you know, what are the words that you're saying, but what is the feeling that you're getting? What is the emotion that is attached to that, that has a much more power? And we know that all healing is based on energy, and prayer is one of the things that has a tremendous ability to produce the energy, just like music can, just like colors can, just like words can, et cetera.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting that you bring this back to energy, because that's where you started with the impedance.
Right.
It's all
right.
About it in a sense.
Yeah. 100%.
And so I guess the question would be for listeners is there anything that they, you know, besides the, what you said in terms of the basics, you know, drink enough water, make sure you're eating right, get sleep, spend time outside, mm-hmm. put your hands in the ground or your feet in the ground. Is there anything else that you might recommend for people that they can do for self-care on their own?
Well, you know, now what I'm telling many patients is, you know, I said one of the first things you should do in the morning, besides drinking a glass of water and try to move, is look in the mirror and say, what am I going to do for that person today? Hmm. I do think it's important that we do, you know, we've been talking about spirituality. I truly believe that it's important that we have a belief in something higher than us as far as healing is concerned. And once again, it doesn't matter to me who you pray to or what that belief is per se, just that you have one per se. And so meditation is typically a very healthy thing that people can do for themselves. And, you know, and even if it's 3 minutes, I mean, you don't have to basically, you know, do a 45-minute meditation, but even if you're at work and, you know, you sit for 1 minute and just, you know, don't answer your phone and don't be bothered for 2 minutes, just take that time to center yourself and to reattach yourself to the universe per se, and, you know, calm yourself. You know, technically that's what vacations are supposed to be about. We sort of change our routine, but we can't wait for a vacation. People take a vacation twice a year, maybe, but we have to do it 365.
Yeah. And generally people take vacations and they're running around like chickens with their head off trying to see everything that they can.
Yeah.
You know? So there's that aspect. You know, they need a vacation from their vacation.
That's absolutely true. That's true. So the self-care, saying self-care and prioritizing your day, I think is a really essential thing. Everybody will do, you know, what it is that they do. You know, for myself, I never skip. And in fact, I'm proud of say that this morning was my 1,192nd consecutive day of walking 2 to 3 miles every morning. It's the only, I get up, I feed the dogs, let them out, and then I go for a walk. And I come back, it's quiet, put my ear pods on, listen to some music, and it's quiet time. And I've done that for over 3 years without missing a day.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you were sick in that time.
I was sick in that time, and it's a challenge, you know, to do that. But it's that important to me that unless, you know, I was on my deathbed, I said, one of the things that's positive here, I live in a beautiful climate, and I don't get winter storms. And I live in a beautiful place that it's not hard to get outside in the morning, because, you know, for us, a cold morning is like 50 degrees. Oh, it's so cold.
That's freezing to us.
I know. It's like even for us in Arizona, it's like probably even more so in Hawaii per se. But, you know, probably in those 3 years, I probably walked in the rain 3 times.
Wow.
It doesn't rain here, so it's not a problem.
No, it doesn't. I was going to joke that woman, 110, was she older or lower than the temperature, you know?
Day, probably she was lower than the temperature, because we had the string there of 14 or 15 days, 115, 113, 118 one day. Yeah, we had a string of some pretty hot days. That's why I walk early, because, you know, you can't walk after 9 because it's already 100 degrees. So
Oh, my God. I can't even imagine. Well, Dr. Tom, thank you so much for doing this and joining us. And And I really appreciate it.
Appreciate the opportunity, and I always appreciate sharing, you know, and when you have people listening, once again, as I said earlier, the hope is that maybe it'll tweak something, maybe it'll make you think about an experience that you have or now or in the future and how you may respond differently to your own particular health issues and looking towards forward to spontaneous healing of whatever your challenges are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, you take care.
Thank you once again for joining me on this podcast and listening to Dr. Tom and I discuss different issues. And if you have any questions or comments, feel free to send an email to info@askdrgill.com, askdrgill.com. I haven't figured out the exact dates for the workshop yet, but in the show notes, there'll be a link to a form that you can use to sign up to get notifications and get on the early notification schedule. And you'll get a download if you want. It's a small ebook on helping you identify core beliefs and what to do about them as well. So I hope you enjoy, and I hope you enjoy the podcast, and I'll see you next time.